accession number 19851, Reel 3.
Reel 3.
There's a massive barbed wire, and there must have been a million cans, empty bean cans and corned beef tin cans tied around it, and if anybody just touched that wire, one part of it, it would have vibrated all the way around the house, tins rattling. It would have been a hell of a job for anybody to get through it without making a noise. And the security was very strong. The thing was that all the troops in the camp used to get their day made when Miss Mary Soames, Mr. Churchill's youngest daughter, used to have to walk through the camp in front of all the huts to go to the officers' mess to have dinner in the officers' mess, because she married an officer who was engaged in the guard in there, Mr. Soames, Captain Soames, the present MP's father. And she was a very beautiful woman, you know, Mary Soames, when she was young. She was the pin-up of all the regiments at Chequers, and as soon as the word went down, as soon as she set off from that house, down the path, the word went right down the huts, "Mary's on her way down," and everybody used to be scrambling to get to the windows, and all she did was take it in good part and laugh. And then on the Christmas, her and her father, Mr. Churchill, come and he give us a big barrel of beer, and he come and had a look around while Christmas dinner was on and the beer was being dished out.
So was it a popular duty to be?
Oh yeah, it was very popular. Yeah, very popular. Because he was away from the Blitz and whatever. And he was nicely out in the country, and it was only a village outside of Aylesbury. I think it was, again, somewhat Risborough.
Princes Risborough.
Somewhere near there. I can't remember the name just now, but that's where we did all that.
Now, you said you transferred to the 5th Coast Green Guards at Aylesbury. Yeah. Can you pick up the story from there, please?
Yes. And I was in a headquarter company, and I remained with headquarter company right until 1944, when the battalion moved to Normandy, and then I went into a rifle company.
So what kind of things were you doing between 41 and 44 with in England?
Well, we were training, we was at Elstree, and then we went we went to Devon under canvas for a month, and in that month it rained nearly every day, and we went to do training and we couldn't do any training. The camp was a quagmire, couldn't even get the vehicles out the camp. So as a training exercise, it didn't materialise much. And then we left there and we went to, we ended up at Wiltshire. We ended up at Wiltshire. It's a place called near Warminster, a small village. Anyway, we ended up there, and from there we did all Salisbury training and what have you. And eventually we left there and we went up to. We travelled all one night on an exercise called Exercise Spartan, which was the biggest part of the army in England was taking part in. In fact, there were 96 or 7 men killed on that exercise. And I know that's true because I have it.
Yeah, don't bother about the boats.
I'm just going to say I have it in a book here, that the official numbers. There were 97 men throughout the army killed on Exercise Spartan. And then we ended up at Hunstanton.
What do you remember about Exercise Spartan?
Well, what I remember about Exercise Spartan was I was on the back of the truck and we was moving up towards, was in the rugby area. And I, all of a sudden, an officer come along and he shouted me out the truck. He said, get your gear together. You have a telegram here from your mother stating that your father's very, very seriously ill and he isn't likely to last another 48 hours. So he gave me a warrant for the train and 48 hours to see how things were going on. And he dropped me off the convoy just outside Rugby, and he pointed down this road. He said, follow this road right down and it'll bring you to Rugby station. But that was about 1 o'clock in the morning. So I ended up dropped off the convoy to go home at Rugby, and I had to walk about, I should think it'd be a couple of miles, into Rugby at 1 o'clock in the morning. And then when I got there, I found out there would be no train while about 8 or 9 o'clock. So it more or less, it was a long journey for me. And when I got home, I did eventually get home, and my father was very ill. He was very ill, and the doctor said, well, it won't last no more than 48 hours. Anyhow, at the end of 48 hours, this pass had run out. So I had to go to what they call the town major. He was in charge of the town of Hull, and he was on Springbank. And I went with this pass, and I explained to him what was on like. And I said, I want an extension for at least another 24 hours to see what's going to happen. And his answer was, your passage for 48 hours, you'll get back on that train. There's no extension, you'll get back on the train. He refused to give me a 24-hour extension. I went, and in the meantime, the battalion had finished the exercise and had moved to Hunstanton in Norfolk. And I got orders. I was sent a telegram to report back to Regent's Park Barracks, because I didn't know where the battalion were. But I got a telegram to say I had to report back to Regent's Park Barracks. And anyway, I reported back to Regent's Park Barracks, and then they said, oh, the battalion's at Hunstanton. Here's a warrant, get to Hunstanton. I walked in Hunstanton at the dinner time. And when I walked in, they said, the company sergeant really said to me, what are you coming back for? I said, they won't give me an extension to my 48-hour pass. He said, you'll get an extension now because your father's dead. They've just sent a telegram, he's dead, and you have to go back home. And so I ended up, all that messing about coming back. I just got back, and they was waiting for me there to give me the telegram. Go back home. He was dead.
Whereabouts on Springbank was that, the town major was located?
It was in Peel Street, or one of them. It was like a brick building on the end, in the middle of the road. It was like a brick, big square brick building with a concrete top.
What happened at Hunstanton?
Well, I had to come back to Hull for my father's funeral, and then I went back to Hunstanton.
What kind of duties were going on there?
Well, usual training. Usual training in the battalion, and until eventually we moved up to Malton area to do tank training with the division's tanks on the Yorkshire Wolds.
What did you learn to do on tanks?
I wasn't on a tank. I was in an infantry battalion. I was infantryman. There was no restriction on what they did. They just ploughed through fields of corn, flattened it all down and everything. There was no restriction on movement of the tanks. They just did what they wanted.
This is the Guards Armour Division?
Yeah. I was stationed at a little place called Rillington, just outside Malton, on the Scarborough Road, Rillington. I do believe it was on a farm owned by a Yorkshire cricketer called Vic Wilson at the time. And from there, we did quite a lot of exercises and then moved to Scarborough. We moved to Scarborough out of these billets to get the battalion all in one area. And then from Scarborough, we left to go to Normandy.
So did you learn as an infantryman how to cooperate with tanks?
Oh, yeah.
How are you supposed to cooperate with a tank?
Well, we also always believed that a tank couldn't go nowhere without infantry. So you was always there. Where they went, infantry was there. But at the same time, infantry in this war wasn't much good without tanks. We used to ride on the back of them. We used to ride on the backs of the tanks.
Can you tell me about preparations for Normandy, please?
Yeah, well, the thing was, I'd been in hospital at Beverley from an exercise we'd done, with pleurisy, and I'd been in the hospital about a fortnight at Beverley Base Hospital with pleurisy, and then I was out on this exercise and I just couldn't get out. It was bitter winter time, and next morning I was in this trench, and when I come to get out, I just couldn't get out. I was frozen nearly stiff, and this pain in my chest when I'm breathing. Anyway, they come and they took me, and I ended up in Beverley Base Hospital. When I got to Beverley Base, I wasn't the only soldier in there. The place was full of them. They was laid all over on stretchers in the corridors through this exercise. Anyway, when they did let me out, they sent me back to my battalion at Scarborough. And there was a letter from the hospital at Beverley stating that I should have to have at least a month's leave before I did any duty. So I thought, oh, this is going to be good. I'm going to go home for a month. I went in front of the commanding officer and he said, well, I can't give you a month in one go. I'll give you a fortnight and see how it goes from there. And if necessary, I'll give you another fortnight to make the month up. But I'll give you a fortnight to start with. So I went home for a fortnight. I was home 3 days, and the next thing was I got a letter. Report back alert immediately, all leaves cancelled.
Had you made a recovery by then?
No. I'd only been 3 days. 3 days, that was all.
What treatment had you been given for pleurisy?
that stuff, where they put it around. Kaolin plasters. Hot kaolin plasters.
Did it do any good?
Oh, yeah. I was all right when I got out. Bit weak-like, but that's why, as I said, I had to have a month's leave, sick leave. But I went and I was home 3 days and they said, oh, there's a letter there for you. And when I went, it said, report back immediately. All leave's cancelled.
So you got the pleurisy from spending the night in the open in the winter?
Yeah. And so that was it then. There was no leave for anybody then. So my month ended up with 3 days.
What happened to you then?
Well, I just went back and carried on. When I went to CDMO, I had to CDMO when I got back for him to mark me fit for duty. Because I was unfit for duty when I'd gone on leave. So I had to go and see him for him to examine me and make me fit for duty. And when I went, she said, oh, your sick leave didn't last long, did it? I said, no. Oh, I said, well, anyway, you're all right now. Off you go.
Did you feel all right?
Well, I wasn't right, but I, like everything else, you say, well, all the chumps within the world won't alter it. That's it. And I just went back, and then there was no, the next thing was, we're going tomorrow, we're going down to the south coast.
What happened there?
And when we got to the south coast, we went into Eastbourne, and it was all enclosed off. It was like a restricted area. You couldn't go out the area, and people couldn't come into it. And that was the same for all the the forces in the area that was going to Normandy. They were all kept apart from the public, in camps, couldn't get out. They were like that for over a month. And until we did go, and actually I went across before the battalion got there, because I went, the battalion had to provide, each company had to provide so many men to form another company. You see what I mean? Each company had to supply so many men to form another company that was going to go across to Normandy first, and they would be what they call the first line reinforcements. In other words, as soon as they got any casualties, we were going to be the first to go in to make them up. Anyway, we set off. We was there a fortnight before the battalion. And we was there waiting, and we went across from Newhaven, and we landed on Sword Beach. Of course, all the shelling had just stopped then, when we landed. But we went as a company under Captain the Marquis of Artington, Lord Devonshire's brother, Duke of Devonshire's brother, who got killed. He got killed in the battalion. He was married. While he was at Eastbourne, he married President Kennedy's sister. She was killed in an air crash but he was killed later on in the campaign in Holland or somewhere around there.
Which company were you in?
Number 3 Company. And he took us out there as officer in command of the company, like. And we just Ken camped just outside Bayeux, and as I say, while we was at, unfortunate for him, while we was at Eastbourne, he married President Kennedy's sister, and then when he went to Normandy, later on when they moved out of nobody and got further up towards Holland, I think it was, he got killed. And then later on, she got killed in air crash.
What was he like as an officer?
Oh, he was all right. And then the President Yuki of Devonshire, was in the battalion at the same time.
Which platoon were you in at this time?
Oh, now, I have to think now. I think it was number 13, but I won't be sure. Because it's so long, 50 odd.
So what happened to you at Bayer?
We stopped there, and then the battalion landed, and they went straight into a place called Carpeaky Airfield on the outskirts of Cairn. And they stopped there for a day or so, and as the men was wounded, we went up and took the places. There wasn't a lot happened there, really. But there was one bad action. Well, it was accidentally one action where one of the carrier platoons, we had a lad from old in the platoon, and he was in the carrier platoon, and he was among the first casualties at Carpeaky, because the carrier was destroyed by a mortar bomb. And I knew him real well, because he came from Hull. So we all knew one another from Hull. Everybody knew one another, like. And he got killed there. It killed, I think, out the old crew, it killed about four of them, out the five. And that was the thing about it. It wasn't the fact that you just sat there was the worst thing. Just sat there being mortar bombed and doing nothing. And anyway, they come out there, and we settled in just outside Bayer. But we weren't there long, and the next thing was there was an all night ride from one side of the front to the other, all in darkness. And then the next, the paratroopers was in these positions on the River Orne and Pegasus Bridge, and we went over the bridge during the night and passed through the paratroopers into the open ground in front of them, and we dug in there because there was going to be a 1,000 bomber raid the next day on the factory districts of Cairn to try and get Cairn captured in the end. And there was going to be a 1,000 bomber raid, so we was on this crest looking down on these factories, and we just dug a trench enough to lie down in, everybody, and waited for the bombers come in. And next morning there come 1,000 bombers, and they just came. You wouldn't believe it, that they actually came, 1,000 bomber raid over Cairn to a factory district called Columbells. And I was surprised, because I thought they would have been flying in squadron formation, but they weren't. It was just one mass of Lancaster bombers, 1,000 strong, all just flying, you know what I mean, haphazard, all just in a big mass. And they went over it and they bombed it, the factory district. And there was 1,000 bombers, and there was just Lord and Lord had said, oh, you all go over and just go on bombing. No formations or nothing like that. And they did bomb it. Oh, it was the bombing. Good God, I thought, well, there can't be anybody left alive. And the dust, oh, the dust. It was rising like an atom bomb, the dust. But the point was, when it all stops, And we went forward, there were still Germans alive. There was a lot killed, but there was also some French civilians were killed in, you know, in them bombing raids, because a lot of them stayed in the houses. But the bombing didn't kill a lot of Germans. In fact, a lot of people say it was a waste of time. And of course, then we carried on, and we went to one village. We cleared some Germans out of there. I can't remember. I have the names written down, but they're in a book here, the names of the villages.
Don't worry about that.
And anyway, all it was a matter of clearing villages, and being an infantry, lorry-borne infantry battalion in an armoured division, all we did was attacking all the time. It was non-stop. And some of the attacks were one place we got held up at nearly dusk one night, and so we had to dig in for the night. And the next morning they said, oh, the intelligence corps are playing up hell, and the brigadier's playing up hell. There's a couple of men with machine guns on the ridge holding the whole brigade up. So he said, going to alter that. We're not having that. A couple of Germans with machine guns holding the whole brigade up. And it was dusk, so we had to dig in for the night. Next morning, they decided to send two tanks and a platoon of men up to take this crest. There was about 18 men and two tanks.
Including you?
No. We was due to do this attack, but in the morning, our officer, Lieutenant Natchbull, he was in the trench and he couldn't get out the trench. He'd got pleurisy, and he couldn't get out the trench, and he was supposed to have took us, our platoon, to do this platoon attack. So when they come and took him away, they said, oh, well, the company commander said, oh, well, look, Lieutenant Mitchell can take his platoon. So Lieutenant Mitchell took his platoon, and out of the number of men, there was 14 men killed going up to that ridge with two tanks. We lost 14 men, and they said, they turned around and they said, oh, it wasn't just a couple of men, it was a main German position where they was going to alter advance. In other words, the next day when we attacked it, they attacked it with a full brigade of infantry. And they'd sent two tanks and about 20 odd men up there. There was 14 men killed anyway. But Lieutenant Natchbull, he was ill in the bottom of the trench, who was supposed to have took us. But Lieutenant Mitchell took his platoon. But Lieutenant Natchbull, later on, he was Lord Brabourne. And he was on the